We're doing Yeshaya, and we'll dedicate our learning to the speedy recovery of Tzipora Feiga Bat Liba. Hashem should send her a quick recovery and the refuah shleima. We're in Yeshaya, what they call the 45th chapter, the 19th pasuk. The Navi says, Lo vaseter dibarti. I did not speak in hiding, says Hashem. Bimkom eretz choshech. I did not say my things in a dark land. When I said at Sinai, I made things known. I gave enlightenment to the world, and everyone heard about it. And so the nations had a choice with the great revelation at Sinai, how they were to react to it. And we have a few midrashim that discuss the nations had questions. Every so often, there are people who ask me to accompany them to a visit by a psychologist. And every so often I go. So someone asked me not so long ago to go with them. And we went to the most expensive psychologist I ever saw in my life. The guy takes about $3-4 a minute, meaning an hour is $250. So you guys do the math. It's almost $5 a minute, right?
Dollars.
Yeah, each visit was over 1,000 shekel, right? Each hour. So I wasn't going to say a word, right? When you're paying that kind of money per minute. And it struck me, because one of the things he said was, he said to the person, he said, you guys are getting big advice here, right? 1,000 shekel an hour. One of the things he said was, he said, there are two approaches. Very often, people's approach to life is, this is the way I am. People see their desires, and they feel like their desires are them. And that's not true. There is me, and there are my desires, and I have to know that I can control my desires. And he spoke about this for like a half hour. And the patient, I mean, the person said it gave him a lot of tools to deal with life. And I walked away thinking, I say that every year when we hit the parasha Lo Sachmod. I always say it when the Torah revealed to us in the Ten Commandments, Lo Tachmod, don't desire. The Torah was teaching us we are not our desires. We control our desires. The commandment of Lo Tachmod was an enlightening moment to mankind. Mankind could think, I have no control. What do you want from me? A lot of psychology tells us today, you're pre-wired to do this, you're pre-wired to desire that, because, there's a lot of science out there supporting the fact that we have predispositions. But Judaism says you're not predetermined. The idea of Lo Tachmod says you control your thoughts. You control what you desire and don't. And that's a very empowering commandment. But Chazal tell us the nations heard the Ten Commandments. And so that means that it wasn't only for us. And Rav Soloveitchik writes that the original idea was that the Ten Commandments would be for the whole world. We discussed once that this concept tells us that Shabbat was supposed to be for the world. Rav Soloveitchik has a whole piece about the idea that really Shabbat goes back to creation. It's not a Jewish thing, it's a world thing. The world devolved, and so the world didn't merit getting Shabbat. We only get Shabbat, and non-Jews not allowed to rest on Shabbat. But technically, Shabbat goes back to the idea of creation. It's not a Jewish thing. Then we left Mitzrayim, and Hashem said, okay, Shabbat is your thing. It commemorates Mitzrayim and creation. But really, the Ten Commandments were meant for all of mankind. On some level, he doesn't spell that out. That's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says that the nations it was taken away from them. The Gemara speaks about the rewards for the seven Noahide laws, and perhaps Rav Soloveitchik takes that over there too.
If you're not ready to handle the reward,
know if it's necessarily a huge error to think about stealing and not do it. It's not where I want to be at. I don't want to hold this way. But, you know, to say you have this opportunity to do whatever, you start trading, this and that. To say that it never crossed my mind when I'm in debt and this and that, you know what I'm saying? That's a very high level. So I think it's to not be able to observe Shabbat, not to give it Shabbat because you're in, whatever it is, and you're never exposed to it, they don't look at it as a punishment. It's just you don't merit this reward yet. It's different.
I'm not sure. Right, but I don't know what Rav Soloveitchik's source is. I thought it might be the Medrash that says that Hashem was said, what's the Pasuk? One second. I don't remember right now the Pasuk in the Midrash, but the Pasuk describes how, it's not a Pasuk, no. The Medrash says, Mashal lemadava dome. Marshall, what's it similar to? There was a king who tried one wife and she wasn't faithful, so he got rid of her. He tried a second wife and she wasn't faithful, he got rid of her. And then he met a young girl who was impoverished and not so famous and not so anything. So this is the Medrash on the beginning of Bamidbar, if I'm not mistaken. The Medrash says that you see the beginning of Bamidbar, Hashem gives a date, everything exactly where they were and what the date was. So too the king says, this girl, let's write down a ksuba, let's write down the day, let's write down the time, write down everything. My first wives I didn't do that with. Says the Medrash, who were the first wives? First wife was the generation of the flood. The second wife was the generation of Sodom. The third wife is Am Yisrael. So I thought that, what does the Medrash mean by that? I thought maybe that Medrash is the source for what Rav Soloveitchik was saying. The Medrash is telling us, it seems, that there was potential in the generation of the flood to be the chosen people. They were right. They were the honorable first wife. There was a potential in the people of Sodom and Amorah to be the chosen people. And that means when we read about great destruction in the world, so the Medrash is telling us, hey, they could have been Am Yisrael. Those people that you see became so immoral, well, you should know where they could have gone. And I'm saying this is how I'm taking the Medrash, and I'm telling you where, if the Medrash says they were the first honorable wife, so then I'm saying that certainly sounds that way. So then the Medrash says, okay, now we're the poor wife that gets chosen. It's true, we have Midrashim that say that the concept of Am Yisrael predates creation, but who said it had to be us? Who said the concept of Israel couldn't have been the generation of the flood, the generation of the people of Sodom and Amorah? I don't know. So the concept of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov predates creation, but did it have to be them, or could it have been the progenitors of these generations? I'm just saying that's why it does seem like it's a punishment, that there was a potential and they lost it.
That generation didn't leave Egypt. They weren't slavery in Egypt.
Which generation?
Sodom.
Right.
So they could have been, is it the,
I don't know if the generation of Sodom would have done tshuva if that wouldn't have been called the leaving of Egypt. Remember, we went down to 49th rung in Mitzrayim. I don't know if the exodus from Egypt was so great because of the 10 plagues, or the exodus from Egypt was so great because the nation was willing to grow. The nation said, we're making an about face. We were at the bottom rung, and you see that 4 out of 5 didn't. 4 out of 5 wanted to stick around. I'm not sure. I'm saying that here you have many Rishonim who say in the Haggadah, when we say, Ve'ilu lo tzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu otanu misham, Areyanu, Vaninu, Vneinu, Mshubadin, Neinu, Lefarov, Mitzrayim. If Hashem wouldn't have taken us out of Mitzrayim, all of us would still be in bondage in Egypt. So many commentaries say the idea is sociologically, morally, we would have become bound to the Egyptians. Technically, we might have gone free, but we would have lost it. We were on the brink. That's after Brit Ben Abtarim. That's after Hashem tells Avram Avinu, Yadu Atidaki Geri Yezaracha. But here the Medrash is suggesting it could have played itself out differently. Again, we don't say that Hashem created Fashlot in the world. We don't say Hashem says, shucks, should have been that way. But rather the Medrash is giving us a perspective. When you see those generations, you see how far they fell. You see Hashem had to change the world to destroy them. Realize that those people had tremendous potential. They weren't just a failing. They were people who had a choice, and had they chosen differently, they would have been very, very great. I'm saying, again, yes, Hashem had a plan. This is all part of the plan. 10 generations, etc. But it's a perspective. Coming back to here. Yes, sir. Right.
I'm saying that's taking it to the extreme that they would be 100% Egyptian. But I'm saying we see that when we did leave Egypt, they were still talking about what Egypt was like and how they miss aspects of it. So you're taking it to they would have been 100% Egyptian. But I'm saying there were aspects that, from what did happen and when they did leave, that they were still Egyptian.
Took time. You could take the monkey out of the jungle, but it's much harder to take the jungle out of the monkey.
All of that stuff is a...
That's a long Thursday night question. For now, I'll say yes, and more details if you want on Thursday night. So Hashem says, when I gave the Torah, levasetel dibarti, it wasn't in hiding. There was a reason why the Ten Commandments had to shake the earth. So again, going with our Rabbi Avram that we learned yesterday, whether it means literally, the way the Medrash is written, that the whole world shook and everyone came clambering to Bilam and they said, we heard this, the Ten Commandments, what are we supposed to do? What is Hashem saying? We could take it on that level. Or whether it means that the word got out, meaning the Ten Commandments were said and then word got out, there's a whole new religion running out there. And there are Ten Commandments, and as the Medrash says, when they heard the first five, the first four, they said, every God says that, I'm the only one, don't believe anyone else, don't serve anyone else. Ah, but then they heard, honor your parents. They said, no religion gets involved in how I treat my parents. Wait a second, this is something new. God cares about how I treat someone else. So the nations were in shock, and the nations were exposed, and the nations recognized there was something new going on here, and the nations recognized there was something real going on here. And our sages repeatedly tell us that the nations are held accountable. Why didn't you wake up and do something? We find Amalek wakes up and says, let me attack. Yisrael, their neighbor, wakes up and says, let me join. But we don't find other people saying that. Lo vaseitel dibarti, says Hashem, I didn't keep things covered when I spoke. Bimkom eretz choshech, I didn't say my Ten Commandments in the dark territories out in the jungles of Africa where no one would hear about it. On the contrary, lo amarti lezera Yaakov, tov hakeshuni, I did not say to the descendants of Yaakov, go out to desolate territory to seek me out. Ani Adonai dover tzedek magid meisharim. I am Hashem who says things in righteousness. I say that I will pay people back when they do the mitzvot. And I told the world the proper way to live. And you, the Jewish people, among all of that, you have your responsibility to live up to that. Hikavetzu vavo. So I have a big question that you guys have to help me out here. Once upon a time, we did half a chapter of Yeshaya every Friday morning. And as the last year has evolved, every time we develop concepts, and we've reached a point where we're doing a pasuk a Friday. Now here there's a big concept to be discussed in this pasuk, aside from the first one we discussed, but then we're never going to finish Yeshaya. So you guys have to tell me, do you want us to go in depth, or do you want us to cover ground? How many people want us to go in depth? Okay. So, there's another concept in the previous pasuk, which is discussed by the Chatam Sofer, and that goes back to what Mr. Fleisch mentioned earlier today. When we view reward and punishment, so the Chatam Sofer asks a philosophical question. He says, if keeping the Torah is like stopping by a red light, it's a basic thing everyone's supposed to do, I could understand why you get punishment if you don't keep the Torah. But then you can't reward a person for keeping it. If keeping the Torah is doing something that's very courageous, you're running into the burning building, you're doing something amazing, I understand why you reward a person for keeping the Torah. I can't understand why you punish him for not keeping the Torah. So Chasam Sofer says there seems to be a philosophical contradiction here. If you punish for not doing it, don't reward for doing it. If you reward for doing it, don't punish for not doing it. Which one is it? So the Chatam Sofer concludes, he says, it's the idea of stopping by a red light. Keeping the Torah is basic. You don't deserve any reward for it. You just deserve punishment if you don't do it. But you know what? Hashem says, I'll be nice to you, I'll reward you. You don't really deserve it. Really, keeping the Torah is just the basic way you're supposed to lead your life. It's in your interest. It's the right way to go. And if you don't do it, Hashem says, you're destroying the world. You really deserve to be punished. But you know what? Hashem says, I'm nice, I'm kind, I'll give you a reward. I don't owe it to you. The whole concept of giving reward for keeping the Torah, says the Chasam Sofer, is a gift from Hashem. It's not something Hashem owes us. The previous pasuk describes the Torah as Dover Tzedek. Rashi says, Leodia Matan Scharan. I began by telling you, when I took you out of Mitzrayim, Im Shamot Ishmu Bekoli, if you listen to my mitzvot, so then I will reward you, you will be my chosen nation, a nation of priests, you will not have any diseases that happened in Egypt, I will take good care of you. And that was before any commandments were given. So Hashem says, I am Dover Tzedek, I speak Tzedek. What does the word Tzedek mean? So sometimes the word tzedek means honesty, straight, right, righteous, tzaddik. So Hashem says, I was fair to you. I told you your reward before I told you the commandments. Does that work with the Chasam Sofer? I'm saying if we don't deserve rewards for what we're doing, it's kindness, then that's not tzedek. I would certainly think that Rashi over here is indicating a different concept. And this goes back to another question which we raised years ago when we started Pirkei Avot, when we learned it also in Ein Yaakov. That's the question of the word Matan Sachar. When we speak about reward in the world to come, in Hebrew it's called Sachar. Wait a second. Sachar is wages. Sachar is something you owe me. If I work, you got to pay me for my time. That's Sachar. So am I getting a reward, or am I getting my due payment when I do mitzvot? The Mishnah says, don't do the mitzvot al menat lekabel sachar. Well, over there you have two opinions among the Rishonim. Whether the word sachar over there means a gift, or the word sachar over there means due payment, the way we use it in modern Hebrew, right? So that goes back to this question here. So we should just be cognizant that there are two approaches to the idea of reward. There's the idea of the Chasam Sofer we just mentioned, and it certainly sounds like Rashi in this pasuk is going with the understanding that there is due wages. Rav Pesin Zatzal said that there are two aspects to being given the world to come. There is sachar. There is an element. He made a combination. I don't know what his source was. He made a combination of these two opinions, and he said, there's a certain element that a person is owed for doing mitzvot, and that's sachar. And then there's stuff that Hashem gives because he's kind and giving. So he presented it as a chont of the two opinions. What I see is the Chasam Sofer and the Rishonim that go that way, and Rashi on this pasuk that seems to go the other way. Yes, Vinny?
Shabbat comes with its, you know, with its obligations and with its rewards. But as a punishment, it wasn't being punished for breaking Shabbat. It was a punishment of not having Shabbat. So I'm saying, wouldn't that make sense that he doesn't owe us to give us the mitzvah of Shabbat because he took it away? But once he gives the mitzvah of Shabbat, then you're obligated, and then you get the reward for your obligation.
Okay, you could say that. There's a Rav Chalap in that line of reasoning. Yeah?
Does it depend? You can think of course it depends what you have to go through in order to live a total life and fulfill the right to lose a wife and 10 kids, God forbid, in the Shoah, and commanded to do it again. That's not so easy. You know, so that's
one thing. Well,
of course, I've given an example so vivid, but I mean, but the other thing is sometimes the wages themselves is a credible reward. My son didn't handle, he played a lot of basketball, and I thought, you know, when I go to a basketball card show and pay someone $10 for signing his name or something, but I said, if he was born 200 years ago, God forbid he'd be a slave. 50 years ago, he'd be paid for $10 a night or $50 a night. Now he makes $20 million. That's his wages, but it's also a heck of a reward. You know, same night. So if I can make Chola die, it's a little easier, I think.